So in that way, it also can be an instrument of soft power.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you like this country so much that you become a resident and later you see how practical it is.
Welcome to this podcast created by the eEstonia Briefing Center. In this series, we invite some of the most influential people in politics and business to discuss all angles of digitalization in Estonia and the world. From past learnings to current challenges and future plans. So take a seat, pour yourself a glass of your favorite drink, and enjoy the art of digitalization. Hello and welcome to another episode of The Art of Digitalization. My name is Florian Marcus. I'm a digital transformation advisor at the eEstonia Briefing Center. And today I have a very interesting guest with me. It's Daniel Varik, who used to be a consultant for the e-residency program, actually from its very inception. And he's been able to look at the development of the eEstonia brand, what it means, what it should mean, and so on. So we're going to talk a lot about branding today. And what does the image of a nation and of a particular facet of a nation actually mean? Daniel, thank you so much for being here. How are you today?
Well, I'm good. I'm good.
Great. With those formalities out of the way, let's dive right into it. So obviously, you've worked as a consultant a couple of years ago for the EU residency program in particular. Can you tell us more about what exactly you did back then?
All right. Actually, before the program started, I had this job from the Ministry of Economy. I was hired to kind of conceptualize Estonia's, I don't know, let's call it messaging,
mm-hmm.
How we talk about e-government and
So you've been deciding how I do my job, effectively.
well, maybe I had some impact on that if I was successful. So, but it's up to you, actually. Yeah. You know, with these strategies, you will always like have this risk that they will be in a drawer somewhere and nobody uses them.
So. Very nice plan you made there. Thank you very much. Have a good day. Yeah. So okay. What did you do? What did you do back then?
I think it was in 2014. I had this task and I didn't know how to actually solve it. So I thought that I will actually go to people around the world who have some influence and I will just have this kind of in-depth interviews with them. And I will pose several hypotheses about Estonia to them. And I will just see how they react. And
yeah.
Kind of this qualitative, very in-depth interview.
Mm.
And actually I had this really funny label to use for myself. I was the member of a presidential think tank of Estonia or something like that.
It sounds
very important, but if you know in Estonia, it's just like a bunch of people who sometimes gathered at the presidency.
Like a side project and they've been to the presidency once.
So I didn't use the Ministry of Economy label because it was really like not so interesting.
A bit drier.
Drier. And so I think I approached about 35 people.
Mm-hmm.
There were like movie directors, there were venture capitalists, there were thinkers, philosophers, and out of this 35, 11 found that this was interesting enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got Tim Berners-Lee, the father of internet. I got Ben Horowitz, quite well-known venture capitalist. I got some science fiction writers from Russia, Garry Kasparov, and so on. And so we had these conversations. And I was actually a bit skeptical in the beginning because I was thinking that, well, it is very easy to imagine like all the things about your country when you live in a small country.
Yeah.
But do they really resonate? And then so I went to them and I just tried to probe them about Estonia. And well, that led to some research that actually convinced myself that it is actually possible for a small country to have some kind of fame impact, be a little bit of a pathfinder and maybe be bigger than you physically
sort of punching
are.
Above its own weight class, right? Like yeah, exactly. As a country of 1.3 million people to be recognized in any field around the world, I think is quite a start.
And that's we actually found some kind of important I don't know how to say wordings or important slogans or something to rely upon. One of them was that Estonia is a place where stuff happens first, if we talk about digital stuff. And it was definitely true at that time. You could see like a long line of digital firsts. And actually it was said that Estonia is a place where shit happens first. But then it was kind of difficult to use it everywhere in this formation. I think this came from a UK businessman, Konrad Wolfram.
I think the messaging works better in some countries than others. I would agree with that, yeah.
Yes, and but we also found out, we saw that Estonia is not first in very many things. Mm-hmm. So in digital domain, it's very natural that every country has its own strengths and weaknesses, and therefore we saw there is this kind of danger that we overthink this, that we actually get so self-aware, and then we want to be like we start over-branding it, and we reach the conclusion somehow that we are the best in the world in everything digitally, and that would be really delusional if you look
it's dangerous.
Outside.
Yeah.
It is very dangerous. Yeah. And so we came up with this negative concept, which is e-Narnia, that fairy tale land with digital solutions that, I don't know, solve everything.
Digital honey and chocolate rivers.
Exactly. And we saw it happening, actually. And sometimes, you know, a politician goes abroad and wants to really look good and then start talking about everything we have in Estonia. But actually, if you start checking, you see that, yeah, we have this idea maybe, but it doesn't work. Or I don't know, we even don't have it. somebody was just thinking that we have it. And that's dangerous. And it actually doesn't, the moment the story starts to be taken seriously and then somebody checks it, sees that it doesn't work, you actually lose your credibility.
And that can go very fast, and then it's very hard to regain that sort of international reputation. Yeah.
And so we had like two concepts. The negative one was e-Narnia, and the positive one was Pathfinder. Somebody who goes to check the right path or the wrong path and is able to tell about it to the rest of the world.
Especially the wrong paths as well.
Exactly.
So to be sure, like, hey, this is not the right direction, or we made a mistake here. Yeah.
And that's what is fascinating about IT in a broad sense, that it mostly fails. It has this beta philosophy. Yeah. You have so many
iterations of testing,
and you can actually shamelessly talk about it, but what is difficult, it is difficult for governments and politicians to admit that we make mistakes. And so if you take the digital this kind of logic, beta testing logic to the government, they sometimes may say that, and hey, the government,
do not
our
want
government, we don't make mistakes.
Yeah, that's actually something that we've seen around the world with digitalization. Mm-hmm. So many countries looking at digital projects and saying, oh, we want to start with a very, very small pilot project to see whether it actually works. And then maybe in 10 years, we'll have an online tax declaration. Right. Because what we've seen, for example, with the US, when Barack Obama put online healthcare.gov and it failed, he was ridiculed for that on an international level. And he actually referred to the Estonians that he should have asked them in the first place. But so that was good PR for us, I guess. But the risk for politicians is that there are re-elections every 4 or 5 years, depending on your legislation. And it's really tricky to have the sort of trial and error.
But it is possible. I mean, you have to invent this language. And it's like I was talking to Dutch data scientist who was... I don't even remember, was he part of a hacker team or not, but what he described was that e-voting that went bad in Holland because the hackers actually discovered vulnerabilities there. And later, these same hackers were asked to join a working group to fix it. I mean, this is what you should do. You should say that there may be mistakes, but there is a certain way how we solve them. And that can actually make you stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what was actually the whole point of a paper we actually prepared, was that you need to reinvent the language, how you talk about government and e-government.
So you said that back then you started with some hypotheses. And I was curious, what were your own preconceptions of digital Estonia? Like, just being an Estonian, having grown up sort of around the system, I sometimes get the impression that many Estonians are, number one, not necessarily aware of how much better they have than the rest of the world or most of the world, but also that because they are used to whatever is their normal, they are still very happy to complain. Because, you know, humans will always complain about the status quo, even if it's amazing. Yeah.
Well, I had this the same complaining gene in me as well. Because, you know, there has always been this dual understanding that, yes, we have some successes in IT, but these belong to the past. And today, there's, how we call it, like this e-tiger, it's it's sick or it's dead. It's not being developed anymore.
Yeah.
So there has always been this kind of double, I don't know, meaning to it. And people who sometimes have admired something that we do here in Estonia were already worried that we are already behind.
Yeah.
And I had this... I still think that it needs to be healthy kind of skepticism. I hope I had it. So I actually looked at all this kind of international rankings, and I saw that Estonia is not the first in most of them, actually.
Yeah.
So, and I also had this, I was prepared to actually come back with this, that we are not going to make a dent.
We can close this down, basically.
No, not even close this down, but yeah, this promotional messaging, that doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
But it does, I think.
Mm. So you would say that overall your own impressions were similar to those of the people that you interviewed? Was there like a wide spectrum of different opinions, or was it mostly in the same direction? What did you find out?
I found out that there is a need in people to believe in something. And I also found out that people were very comfortable with believing that Estonia may be fulfilling this need. It's a small country. It does something interesting. And people need to attach their, you know, their imagination to something. And that actually gave me this feeling of responsibility. But if Estonia starts like talking this big talk about democracy and openness and all that, and when these people believe in it, then we are actually responsible for not spoiling this.
Yeah.
I mean. And that led me to this understanding that it actually is very much down to values. Because just, I don't know about you, but you can always check this, how your values align with the country by just thinking that I want to be a residency of a country X, like country China, country Russia, country Moldova, country US, country Estonia. Which would you choose? If you want to become an e-resident. And I think you choose not only over technology, but you also choose...
Do you want to be affiliated with that country?
Yeah, ideology, actions, all these kind of things.
Yeah. Weather.
Weather, maybe e-residency. Yeah,
don't come.
Doesn't matter that much. But yeah, sure, you definitely are not looking only into a technology, where you're looking at everything else as well.
Mm-hmm.
And in that respect, I also saw that Estonia was quite welcome among this crowd.
Yeah.
They were ready to believe that some decent technology may actually emerge from that country. Mm. And in that respect, I think we were a bit similar to the Nordic countries, like Swedish.
It's a big debate going on,
Swedish technology. Okay, I think that they are not really building something evil into it, so maybe I trust it. I mean, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that the government is inherently benevolent. So obviously there, I'm always very careful with this Estonian notion of, oh, you have to trust the system. No, you don't have to trust the system. Yeah. You have to be able to verify that it's reliable. But I feel like Estonia, at least relatively speaking, delivers quite well on that with the data tracker and so on, that I can see, you know, the last time government authority X looked at my data, and I can block my medical data and so on.
Yeah, sure. I think that this was also one of really important messages that emerged from that study, was that you need to prove also.
Yeah, that you're trust not, but verify.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm always been very, very keen. I'm actually, sometimes I go to this e-portal that we have as Estonians, and I just check if I can check if someone has checked me. And this is not always working, but it works with some key systems. So I think that is already very good. But I'm always also afraid that with the next iteration, something may not work again. And there needs to be someone who is always worried about it.
Yeah.
And actually, Tim Berners-Lee proposed that maybe Estonia should have some kind of data ombudsman or some kind of authority that would...
The Data Protection Inspectorate, I suppose.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, that we have, yes. But they should maybe define this kind of role even more.
Yeah,
and we're always fighting for this kind of transparency, two-sided transparency.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the sort of what's sometimes called the little brother approach. So yes, the government can see your data, but you can see when and why and
little
what.
Brother. Yeah,
very true. Do you feel like Estonia, the briefing center as well, has mostly heeded your plans, the messaging and so on that you've advised? Do you feel like the branding and the messaging has evolved over the last 5 to 10 years?
There are two schools. I think there is this very heavy marketing school, which has quite simple KPIs.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes there is a threat that we overdo it. Like we promise something that is not understood, and which is kind of to a side of Narnia. But I always see people who actually get it. I mean, there have been some very nice examples how Estonia has tackled a crisis. For example, we had this security risk for Estonia's ID card.
2017, yes.
Yes. Yeah. And after that, this information, how you call it, RIA?
The Information Systems Authority.
Yes, exactly. They had this conference about lessons learned.
Yeah.
That's like a perfect example of what you should do. And also, from the start of a crisis, I think government was very open about what is happening, what we know, what is important for e-residents, for example, to know. And I guess that was a good case study.
I worked for the Estonian government office at the time, and I saw how the Prime Minister's office sort of decided very quickly in favor of a sort of daily, transparent crisis communication. Hey, this is the problem. This is what we're doing to fix it. We're going to keep you up to date. So I think this... we have to be very honest. There is no IT system in the world that is completely unhackable, that will never have a problem. The question is, what do you do about it when it happens?
Exactly.
And, very true.
So, and that is actually so simple idea. And I mean, very many big, huge companies, they understand it in tech.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they cover up and that becomes really nasty. But quite often you see this done right. And so I think the governments definitely should learn from this. Mm-hmm. And there is actually nothing really new in it. I mean, also before IT, I mean, there has always been this kind of crisis communication model, which you can use, especially, again, in Sweden. They learned from Chernobyl and all this kind of... started thinking, what does it mean to create trust? What does it mean to calm people down if it is actually necessary? So, and also if you take our times of fake news and all these kind of things, it's actually extremely difficult to combat, but you shouldn't give ammunition to the other side by keeping things covered, or I don't know.
So what do you think, how the Estonian brand will develop over the coming years? Is there, do you think that we're in a good spot? Do you think that there are any contenders to the throne of the most digital society in the world?
Yeah, definitely there are. I mean, I think there are about 15 countries who think that they are most digital societies in the world, because, you know, this happens in silos. Your tax department comes up with a really good system. They think, and then they just tell you that this is like the best system in the world, be it in Israel or be it, I don't know, in Taiwan or even Spain or somewhere. And these people believe that this is true, and they can't compare. There is no Olympics for tax departments, for example. So I think it's not about having the most advanced system here and there, but I think it's about people's trust, interoperability of systems, how they're linked together, how data is handled. And I think it is more important to have this kind of digital society, which is built around all the checks and balances and stuff, and people really trust it. And I don't know if that's even, if you can even take it to other countries.
I was just about to ask, when you said digital society, do you mean international or national?
I think that...
Because you talked about interoperability as well.
Yeah, yeah. I think that this vision of e-residency being like some kind of operation system for many, many people in the world. I like this idea. I even remember when Taavi Kotka, one of the initiators of e-residency, had this kind of napkin moment. It's like writing down on a napkin, okay, hey, we have 1 million people, a little bit more. How you make it bigger? Like by having more children? Not likely. Well, not very fast.
It's going to take some time at least. Even with the best of intentions.
But let's think about our... how to say, our digital sphere, if it was scalable, if it could actually offer some really, really valuable services to the world and actually have 10 million people, why not? And in that sense, this interoperability is larger than one country. And it needs to be useful.
The whole e-residency project fascinates me, because by now all of the different e-residents around the world, they number you know, they would be the third biggest city in Estonia if they were all live in the same place, and that's that's crazy to imagine. And what I also find so curious about this, I might get in trouble with my colleagues at Visit Estonia, the sort of tourism agency. I think Estonia is a very beautiful country, don't get me wrong. The weather, it's not famous for the weather at some times, I think it's fair to say.
It is famous, but it is
infamous.
Famous for hellish weather.
we have a very lovely summer right now, but yes, sometimes not so good. So I feel like You see many countries around the world focusing on this digital nomad visa, where they say, hey, you can have your company wherever you want, but why don't you live here? And e-residency is the exact opposite of that. It's like, please don't come here. It's very cold in the winter, but you can have all of your, you know, all of the business environment, the digital site you can take from us. And I think this is, it's no longer unique around the world, but I feel like some countries that have adopted a similar system have sort of misunderstood the benefits. We see countries, for example, in Azerbaijan, in the Gulf region as well. I think one of the big points of the e-residency program was that you are now part of the European single market, right? And those countries that are not part of these bigger economic blocks, I don't quite see the advantage of e-residency for them. But interesting to see.
I think it is possible to see it in many ways. I mean, it's just the technology of spreading your own technology or your own services. So in that way, it also can be an instrument of soft power.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you like this country so much that you become a resident and later you see how practical it is. But you just want to be part of it in, yeah. In more, I don't know if tangible is not maybe the right word, but in more ways.
Yeah.
And that's why I think that in the future, there is a possibility that people start becoming parts of this kind of societies for more reasons than practical.
You think even of several countries at the same time?
Could be.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a question of values, then, you know, you can have many values at the same time. That is
true. Because if you,
there is a limited number.
Yeah, you need to be able to remember your values. I mean,
I'm not 100% sure about the numbers on this, but I think that one of the bigger reasons why people applied for e-residency, I'm just pulling up the numbers right now, 12% of the applications came not because they wanted to create a company or anything else, it's just because they were fans of e-residency.
Exactly.
They just want to try it out. Yeah, and then maybe something else comes of it afterwards, maybe they want to create a company afterwards. Yeah, yeah. But just this general interest in this novelty, development, I think is quite strong.
This is, if you asked me before about what has come out of this, am I happy while now not being part of the residency team or anything? So I think that one thing I'm not so happy about it is using the science fictional quality of this idea.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, engaging creative people from all over the world to just, I don't know, make sense of e-residency with art and with literature and with, I don't know, movies.
Yeah.
This we haven't done too much because, you know, we are not very big as a country. We don't have very many, like, resources bring, like, really famous people here. But actually, I think that somebody one day will like write a really great book or make a great movie where this kind of concept is in.
Where an e-resident is logging in and giving a digital signature to...
Maybe there is this world in the future, science fictional world, where people, everyone will live everywhere, but everyone is from different country.
Mm.
I don't know. It can be also really dystopian.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. It's really important to play around with these ideas in order to see where they take us. And there I would be very sad if Estonia is not mentioned. But we need to tell these people that, hey, let's think together, bring them in and have conferences and stuff.
Now, I'm not asking for your consulting services right now. I hope I don't get a massive bill at the end of this conversation. Do you feel like COVID-19, the pandemic overall, presents Estonia with a new way of branding itself, sort of as a result of the sort of how it dealt with the situation and so on? Or do you feel like the Pathfinder approach still is the right way to go right now?
Well, I think it is a Pathfinder approach to find out how Estonia tackles new issues and reports back how it worked out. I think COVID was like as a problem. It is at least neutral for Estonia, or even it can be really used to talk about Estonia.
Yeah.
So I think there is like probably there will be more things in the future, but actually show how Estonia can be ready for this kind of situations.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't have any clear idea, but I think because I haven't seen what happened really, how e-residents, for example, acted during this.
Yeah.
Maybe there was nothing really different from usual times, I don't know. But it definitely is kind of a challenge that e-residency can very well give some kind of solutions to. So
we actually saw, I think, last year that 20% of all newly created companies were created by e-residents. Mm-hmm. So every fifth company in Estonia done so from a country abroad. Yeah. And I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
What we've also noticed in the briefing center, many people anticipated that the day that COVID hits Europe, all of the different countries are going to book out our place every single day from 9 to 5, and they will want all of our digital solutions right now. And we realized very quickly that was not the case at all. I mean, there were a lot more digital conferences and so on, which was great. But we saw that most governments were actually busy with sort of crisis management for the first year. And now, over the last couple of months, we've seen more prime ministers, more presidents and so on return to Estonia. Because now that, I think most countries have been aware of how much they're lacking and where they have to improve. Now they can assess the damage and then head forward, ideally with Estonian know-how and solutions. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so it's an interesting development. And this sort of best practice approach, I think, is something that was relevant when you did your research and is still relevant today.
Good to hear.
Yeah. I would want to finish on a very, very simple question. Number one, what's your favorite digital service in Estonia right now? What is the one thing that you would want to share with the entire rest of the world?
Well, I think it's still signatures. I just signed the annual report of my company, and yeah, it went very easily. So
it's crazy that we're still talking about that topic, isn't it?
Yeah, you know? Because I've had partners, even in Germany, I had some partner before with my previous company. And I was quite sure that since I think they already even knew Estonia very well, they said that, okay, let's sign this document. And so I sent this container to them. And then they said,
what is this?
What was that? We couldn't open it. And that's also, actually, it's on us as well. I mean, it should, well, if it's only really working in Estonia, I mean, we need at least it working across Europe. But anyway, later we ended up with somehow pasting my image of my
much
my
more
signature on a PDF. So
that's much more secure. It's excellent. So the digital signature from Estonia is actually recognized in any EU court of law, but different authorities and organizations are not forced to accept them. You know, sort of it's a tricky situation now. But we see most of the EU moving in slowly but surely in the right direction. Daniel, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for your time. And I hope that you're going to have a fantastic day. And also to our listeners, we hope that you enjoyed this conversation and we'll hear you next time. Thank you and bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
And that's the end of yet another thought-provoking conversation about the art of digitalization. In the meantime, make sure to stay connected with eEstonia on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. You can also check out our website e-estonia.com to learn more about digitalization in this beautiful country and other upcoming events. For now, that is all from our side. Stay tuned for our next podcast episode and have a great day.